Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 1, entitled The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone, Text Number 21.
Etad brahmyati me buddhir, diparchir iva vayuna, bruhyetad adbhutat thamam, Bhagavan Yatra Karanam Etad Brahmyati Me Buddhir Diparchir Iva Vayuna Bruhyetad Adbhutatamam Bhagavan Yatra Karanam Etad Brahmyati Me Buddhir Diparchir iva vayuna Bruhyetad adbhutatamam Bhagavan yatra karanam. Etad brahmyati me buddhi Diparchir iva vayuna
Ladies, please. Ladies, please.
Bhagavan yatra karanam.
Please repeat.
Etat.
Concerning this.
Brahmyati.
Is flickering.
Me.
My.
Buddhi.
Intelligence.
Deepa archi.
The flame of a candle.
Eva.
Like.
Vayuna.
By the wind.
Bruhi,
please tell.
Eta,
this.
Adbhutatamam,
most wonderful.
Bhagavan,
possessing all knowledge.
He,
indeed.
Atra,
here.
Karanam,
the cause. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. This is Maharaj Yudhisthira speaking, by the way. This matter is undoubtedly very wonderful. Indeed, my intelligence has become disturbed, just as the flame of a candle is disturbed by a blowing wind. O Narada Muni, you know everything. Kindly let me know the cause of this wonderful event. Purport. The Shastras enjoin tadviganartam sagurum evabhigacchet. When one is perplexed by the difficult problems of life, to solve them one must approach a guru like Narada or his representative in the disciplic succession. Maharaj Yudhisthira therefore requested Narada to explain the cause for such a wonderful event. Om Agyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the wonderful event he's asking Narada Muni about is, as described in the last verse, how is it possible for Shishupal and Dantavakra, in the presence of many exalted persons, to enter very easily into the body of Krishna, whose nature is difficult to attain? So most of you already know the background story going on here. At the Rajasuya sacrifice, Shishupal was blaspheming Krishna so much, insulting him, saying that he doesn't deserve to be worshipped first in the yajna. And after he kind of completed his 100 offenses that Krishna said he was going to excuse, then Krishna very eloquently obliged him to death by cutting off his head. And what was really remarkable is that even though they're quite demoniac sort of persons, very offensive and nasty, Shishupal and Dantavakra, they both, in the presence of many exalted persons, which means it was verified by intelligent persons who were there, they entered into the body of Krishna. They attained liberation. Even though their nature was hellish, their mentality was hellish, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. What's that verse? About your state of mind and you attain a certain destination. Exactly. Tajantanta kalevaram. That based on our state of mind at the time of death, we attain a certain destination. And as was described earlier, that particular state of mind which produces hell is called tama, ignorance. Krishna says this again later to Uddhava in the 11th canto, that really hell just means any place where the mode of ignorance is most prominent. And so if that's your state of mind, such a person is already living in hell. And so it's no surprise that their destination that they deserve or that they desire is a hellish destination. Which is, there's a lot to be said about that. But we won't go into that now. So anyway, they attained liberation. It was considered quite remarkable that Krishna was gave them this sort of special benediction. Of course, we know the background story that they're formerly great devotees, Jai and Vijay. But still, for our edification, Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking Narada Muni, please make this clear what this is all about. And it's really important that we're hearing this about how the Lord can be so equal, as is described here, to everyone, even to the demons. Indeed, that was the first question which starts this whole canto. Indeed, that's what the whole seventh canto is about. We should be very interested in knowing exactly why Krishna is so equal to the demons as to the devotees. Because, at least speaking for myself, I still have quite an investment in demoniac behavior and mentality and desires. And so it's worthwhile to know that there's some hope. And maybe Krishna will bestow some blessings upon me in the same way. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking, this is incredible, it's wonderful, adbhutam, and my intelligence has become disturbed by it. So please, Narada Muni, O Bhagavan, he's addressing Narada Muni in this way, Bhagavan, please let me know the cause of this wonderful event. So that's the subject. Krishna is equal to everyone, regardless of their... How do you say? He's equal to everyone. It's not like the Lord has some sort of bias or he's got some sort of investment in one or the other. Bhagavad Gita describes Shamaham Savabhuteshu Name Dveshostiya Priya. I don't consider anyone to be a particular friend or anyone to be an enemy. And yet someone who's rendering service unto me, they get, you know, special reciprocation from me. And a lot of people can't understand this philosophically. The evidence that maybe perhaps we are in fact in a little bit of this demoniac camp is that we're thinking, I deserve some special mercy from the Lord. I deserve to get more than the next person. That's really the evidence. Like, I just met a fellow on the promenade the other day as I was distributing books. I won't go into what his particular background was, but he's firmly convinced that, you know, naturally his religion is the only way and that others are wrong. And it's not just that others are wrong, but particularly this one religion whom he has some sort of angst against were chosen by the Lord to be an example of how they do everything wrong, and therefore the Lord is punishing them here and there and so on and so forth. And this is really his mentality. But it's hard to back that up philosophically. And so for us to understand it clearly, there's lots of nice stories. This whole seventh canto is about that. Because otherwise philosophy can be a little bit boring and hard to keep everyone awake with. So I'll tell a few stories to make it a bit clear. How Krishna, God, has no investment in one group over another, and yet the devotees do get special reciprocation. So I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again quickly. Once upon a time, before the battle of Kurukshetra, the kings on both sides, on the side of the Kurus and the side of the Pandavas, were massing their armies and getting ready for a massive fight. They all knew it was going to come down at Kurukshetra, and so they had to make alliances and allegiances with other kings and get their armies on their side and so on and so forth. And it occurred to both the Kurus and the Pandavas that we should get Krishna on our side. He's very powerful. And so they both sent their emissaries who arrived at Krishna's palace in Dwarka at almost the same time. Duryodhana himself went on behalf of the Kurus, on behalf of himself. And Arjuna went on behalf of Maharaj Yudhisthira. But Duryodhana got to Dwarka just a little bit early. So much so that as Arjuna was coming in to Dwarka and up to Krishna's palace, he could see Duryodhana going inside. The guards were letting him in and so on. And so Arjuna was just behind him. As Duryodhana entered into Krishna's own room, Krishna in his blissful pastimes was having a cat nap, as some of us do. Krishna did it first, so it's bona fide. So he's having a little bit of a nap. And he was lying down on a bed on his back like this. And there's a seat right next to him. And Duryodhana, he came and he sat down in the seat. And Arjuna came in immediately afterwards. But because Arjuna, he's not like Duryodhana. He's a devotee. He sees Krishna as his worshipful Lord and his best friend. And so he goes to sits down by Krishna's feet at the foot of the bed. And he's looking up at Krishna in a rather reverential and respectful way. Whereas Duryodhana sits down right next to him and tries to wake up Krishna. Here I am, you know. So when Krishna wakes up, again, Duryodhana. Haribol. He probably didn't say Haribol. But Duryodhana called attention to himself and he said, you know, there's a battle happening. I think you know well about it. And we want you on our side. And since you're equal to everyone, Duryodhana knew the philosophy. I've heard from all the great sages like Narada Muni and Vyasadeva, you're equal to everyone, and so therefore you should not favor the Pandavas. You should favor me because I was here first, and I'm asking first. And so when Krishna, though, when he woke up, because of the way he was lying down, he saw Arjuna first. And so he explained this to Duryodhana. That's true, you were here first, but I saw Arjuna first, and so I'm going to give him precedence. That I'm not personally going to fight in the battle, because that wouldn't be quite fair. However, I have 100 million Yadava soldiers who are just as powerful as I am, and one of you can have that army, and the other of you can have me personally as an advisor. So I'm going to let Arjuna ask first. And of course Arjuna, because he's a devotee, he says, Krishna, we want you on our side. And Duryodhana, he said, okay, I'll take the 100 million Yadava soldiers. He was quite satisfied with that arrangement as well. But the point is that although Krishna is equal to everyone, the devotee places him or herself in a position to receive the special mercy of the Lord. It's available to everyone. It's available to everyone. But we simply have to be like Arjuna in that situation. Prabhupada gave the example that the sunlight is shining, but if you're staying inside, hiding from it, then you're not going to get that mercy, that benediction from the sun, get your vitamin D. Although it's available to anyone, whether low caste or high class. So that's really worthwhile for us to know when we approach all of these sensitive subjects in the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, these things which are hard for us to understand philosophically and which might not resonate with our intuitive desire, to know that the Lord and His representatives haven't got it out for us. There's not just like some sadistic program that's been created for us, following regulative principles, worshipping with reverence, being very regulated and fixed up, and trying to do this very seriously with determination, sacrificing our material desires for the cause of the Lord. It's not because He's got some sort of insecurity issues that the Lord needs our service, and He kind of gets some sort of happiness out of, I don't know, torturing those who call themselves His devotees. No, actually, He's equal to everyone, and so the program of Krishna consciousness, which is given to us ultimately by Krishna Himself, is for our benefit, objectively. It's for our benefit that we have devotional service. And that those who associate with the particular practices of devotional service, or even those who associate with the mode of goodness, get that benefit, objectively. That's the whole subject of the seventh canto, is that although it looks like Krishna is favoring the demigods over the demons in this way and that way, what's being described by the acharya is that, no, actually these demigods, because they're in the mode of goodness, because they have a particular lifestyle, they get objective benefit. It's not like subjective, like the Lord just chooses one person over another. So similarly, if we associate with the mode of goodness, and particularly with the practice of devotional service, vaidhi sadhana bhakti, you'll get that mercy, which is available for everyone. It's really that simple. Like it says in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, karmana sukritasyahu sattvikam nirmalam phalam rajasastu phalam dukham agyana tamasa phalam. Krishna says that there is a particular type of work that's in the mode of goodness, and its natural fruit is happiness. Karmana sukritasyahu sattvikam nirmalam phalam. It's very pure. It's free from all sorts of contamination. One who's acting in that way, sukrita, they naturally experience that result. Whereas rajasastu phalam dukham, someone who's acting under the influence of the mode of passion, their fruit is always going to be misery. It doesn't matter whether you're believing this or that. If you're acting in the mode of passion, you'll experience misery. Agyana tamasa palan. For someone who acts under the influence of the mode of ignorance, their fruit is just more ignorance. Doesn't matter whether you believe in this or believe in that. We're acting in certain ways and the influence of certain activities and qualities, and so you'll get a result from it. We should try to perceive that objectively. That it's not like Krishna has just to really get it out to us, that Prabhupada really, just to make our life difficult, came here to America knowing that we were all addicted to intoxication and illicit sex and said, okay, therefore, just so I can kind of feel better about being picked on as a kid or something, I'm going to say no illicit sex, no intoxication. That'll set him right. Right? Some people actually have that perception of our religious culture. They say, you guys are so backwards. How can you follow some sort of guru, some sort of institution which is taking away your freedoms, your freedom to enjoy? Right? I'm sure most of you have heard this at some point. Why would you subjugate yourself to such torture? You're taking away all of your happiness. Sex and intoxication, that's where it's at. Isn't it? But rather, here's an example which will be relevant to most of us today, literally. Rather, when Krishna and the acharyas recommend that we follow these four regulative principles, it's for our freedom. It's actually for your freedom. Just like a doctor who's trying to prescribe all sorts of medication and reparations to your illness, his desire or her desire is ultimately that you become healthy, because when you're healthy, you have actually more freedom to act and to be happy. Whereas a lot of us being sick right now, we can recognize that when you're ill, you're limited. you don't have as much freedom to act in certain ways. You're stuck in bed, sneezing, coughing, can't breathe. It's horrible. It's miserable. So similarly, this addiction for certain nefarious activities, like illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating particularly, they actually destroy one's freedoms. You have to look at that objectively. It's not like Krishna at some point just randomly decided, you know, we'll have to make something sinful, and so I'm just going to pick this, you know. That'll really get their head spinning. Illicit sex, it's sinful, you know, just out of torture. Now, if you look at it objectively, these are activities which destroy one's freedom. Therefore, Krishna says, Raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishyan indrayais charan atma vashyaya vide atma prasadam arigachtati. That someone who's free from attachment and aversion, who follows the regulative principles of freedom, they attain the complete mercy of the Lord. Regulative principles of freedom. It sounds so counterintuitive, but it's quite true. If we take the intelligence and the time to look at these activities, for someone who's habituated to such reckless relationships. Maybe some of you know persons who are like that. They have to go through a new relationship every 2 months or something. So fearful of commitment. They have no freedom. They're forced to act in a certain way. And they're miserable doing it. I can say for a fact that my brother, God bless him, he's quite like that. One of those classic sort of macho men, you know, can't walk past a mirror without checking himself out this way and that way. And all that facial grooming and sort of stuff, you know, it's just like a real ladies man. But he's quite miserable, and he can't help but act in that way. As Prabhupada always said, there's fire and there's butter. Men are like butter, women are like fire. When they're together, they just melt. You can see that pretty well in my brother. Of course, me too, but especially him. So he's not actually free to act in a certain way. One time when I was visiting my mother last time up in San Francisco, when she was there, and my sister came up from Santa Cruz, and my brother was there, and we all went out to dinner. I had to do that whole family thing. And we're waiting in line at some restaurant, and it just so happens that some girl that my brother knew in high school walks by, you know. And here he is, he's doing the whole family thing. He's being nice. He's all, you know, we're happy. We're having a good time. Of course, as soon as some lady he knows enters the scene, you know, he's got to put on his, like, sort of staunch hipster, sort of, like, too cool to hang out with my brother and sister look, you know. It's, oh, yeah, I'm just here doing this sort of thing, you know. No big deal. It can help you. He's forced to act in a certain way. So one's freedom is destroyed by addiction to certain activities. You have to look at it objectively. Of course, intoxication is quite obvious. It's literally addictive. A person can't go through a day without drinking or smoking something or whatever. They can, like, physically hurt themselves if they don't do it. So it destroys one's freedom. Gambling, also literally addictive. They have all sorts of, what do they call them, I can't even think of the word now. You know, they have this sort of things where people get together for their addiction, gambling addictions. Gamblers Anonymous, something like that. People literally get addicted to it. They can go crazy over it. And eating animals, although some people say that meat is really addictive, those persons who are quite attached to it. I mean, certainly one can be attached. I don't know if it's, like, physically addictive. But still, one becomes very much habituated to certain activities. The point is that objectively we can see that one loses one's freedom and one places oneself in a position of misery by those behaviors, regardless of whether you believe in this or that, regardless of whether or not I'm a card-carrying Hare Krishna. If I'm acting under the influence of the motive passion and ignorance, there's going to be suffering. It's not like Krishna's just got it out to get us, that he made these particular activities illicit or sinful. So Krishna consciousness is the real solution. That by performing the activities of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, by associating with devotees, naturally their qualities rub off on us. It's just a matter of association. Just like so many of us are getting sick now, especially in the ashram, practically everybody's got something right now, because it's just a matter of association. You get it. Karanam guna sangasya sadasad yoni janmasu. By flirting with the material modes, you get the illness, the disease. Just like by associating with persons who have a cold, who have a flu, who've got whatever going on right now, you're going to get it. So we should rub shoulders with persons who are transcendentally situated, who have understood this, and who have therefore directed their life towards transcendental behavior, or at least behavior in the mode of goodness. Why is it that we cultivate the mode of goodness? Is it just something on the side? Because we see so many times, it's described in the Shastra, we should transcend the three modes of material nature. Simultaneously, we see so many instructions to cultivate the mode of goodness. How that is because acting under the influence of the mode of goodness is not inhibiting to devotional service, whereas the mode of passion, ignorance, is. Like, for example, the mode of goodness is typified by regulation, cleanliness, austerity. Some of the things that we do regularly is to get up for Mangala Arati, ideally. We come to the temple at certain times, that we are clean, well-dressed, ready, healthy. And by doing those things, by having that sort of prerequisite, then it's very easy for us to do devotional service, which is actually hearing and chanting. So it's not just that you get up at 4:30 in the morning that it's spiritual. There's a lot of people get up at 4:30 in the morning. A lot of people who are up all night, they're up at 4:30 in the morning. Confirmed. In fact, I recall when I was first getting into Krishna consciousness in Wellington, New Zealand, I lived a couple of blocks away from the Gaur Yoga Center where I'd go and see the devotees and associate there. And I remember the first time I was going to see a class, hear a class from my Guru Maharaj. It was at 7 o'clock, of course, I was going there. And I happened to have this really nice apartment in the middle of the city, right in the whole party district. And it's like, it's all night, you know. So at 7 o'clock, I'm leaving my apartment about 6:30 to walk over there. And people are just starting to head home, you know. The sun's coming up. They got a couple of beer bottles in their hand. They're stumbling all over the place. And they're about time to go home. Party's over. So people are up early in the morning. But it doesn't mean that it's transcendental behavior. Rather, by being up early, it's much more conducive for us to perform transcendental devotional service. That's the best time to hear and chant. It's early in the morning. So that's why cultivating the mode of goodness, it's not in itself transcendental, and yet it's very worthwhile to work on that. Another analogy that's given is that if you're going to the airport to catch a plane, being in the mode of goodness is like getting to the airport on time. You're there, you're early, you've checked in, you sit down, you're waiting for your name to be called or your number, and then you get on the plane and you go. That's transcendental. Whereas in the mode of passion is you leave 30 minutes before your plane's supposed to go, take off, and you're flying down the motorway, and you're driving this way and that way, honking at everybody. And you might get there, you might not. Similarly, persons in the mode of passion, sometimes they come to the transcendental level, sometimes not. And being in the mode of ignorance means your alarm clock didn't go off, you miss your flight entirely. It's very hard to get to the transcendental level from the mode of ignorance. So we want to cultivate the mode of goodness by following those regulative principles, being regulated in our lifestyle, being clean, being austere. It's not just some sort of torture program made for us. It's actually for our objective benefit, given by the Lord. And those who associate with those qualities, they naturally get the favor of the Lord, as Krishna said, prasadam adigacchati. They're in a position to receive the special favor of the Lord, whereas those under the influence of passion and ignorance, they can't really get it. You can try to give it to them, but it's kind of like going one ear and out the other. We see it all the time in Harinam, of course, in preaching Krishna consciousness. There's so many persons. You give a lot of mercy, too, but because their lifestyle is just so debauched and so degraded, and it's hard for them to get out of it. You know, they'll get a little something, but it kind of just hits them in the side of the face and falls off, you know. It doesn't mean it's not worthwhile to keep giving them that mercy, but we can see objectively how a particular lifestyle is much more favorable. So that's the whole inquiry being made in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. How is it that it seems like certain persons get the mercy of the Lord and some don't? Why does it look like that? It's because they have the independence and the free will to choose a lifestyle and activities which qualifies them for that mercy. And in order to understand that, as being described in this verse and purport here, we have to hear from a guru. Otherwise, people can't really reconcile this. Otherwise, we have this whole, you know, international religious culture where everybody's thinking my religion's better than yours, and it's very immature. And it's really frustrating for persons who might actually be interested in understanding God when they see these sort of warring camps, you know. It's entertaining but it's philosophically naive. I have to tell one last little story. Some of you already heard the story. But as some of you know, we did a pilot recently. A fellow came up to me. He wanted to do a TV show about religion. Actually wanted to do it for MTV. He's really shooting big. I don't know if it's going to happen. But he asked me to participate in a pilot filming. The subject of which is this young woman who's going to choose a particular religion, and there's, you know, some representatives of various groups who will be giving their viewpoints on different subjects. And she's going to make a decision based on what they say. We have kind of like this round table dinner scenario. And so this fellow was telling me about the show, and he asked me to participate, and we had to do a little interview on Skype. And so he's asking me some questions about our religion, Hare Krishna, to find out what sort of issues are going to be hot topics at the table. In other words, what are we going to argue about? And so he's asking some things, you know. He says, what do you think about gay sex? I said, oh, it's not my thing, but go for it. He goes, what about women's rights? I said, oh, I've been in enough relationships to know women are always right. I'll let that one sink in for a second. Anyway, so he's going off on so many subjects to see what we're going to argue about. You know, what about this? What about that? And then he found, obviously, he was picking up that we've got, you know, a pretty liberal and broad philosophical perspective on religion in general. We're very inclusive and accepting of all different religious paths. And he's getting a little bit upset about it, and he said, don't you just hate other religions? I said, no. Everyone's got their style, you know. I mean, I like doing what I'm doing, of course. He said, well, don't you think that your religion is better than everyone else? I said, oh, you know, I tried to be open-minded and appreciate that persons have their religious system, which is best for their particular, you know, mode that they're in, their lifestyle, and some can take Krishna consciousness, some can't really, and, you know, so I try to be open-minded about this sort of thing. And he goes, that doesn't make very good television. This is what he told me. He said, that doesn't make very good television. I said, well, I'm sorry it doesn't make good television, but it makes a very good philosophy. It makes for a very genuine and appreciable religious culture. To not be so philosophically naive as thinking that we are the Lord's own, that we're favored or something. Actually, the Lord is equal to everyone. That mercy is available to anyone who really wants to take it. And people today are so tired of that sort of warring camp mentality, you know. People are so frustrated with it. And by perpetuating that, we're missing out on the potential of introducing a lot of intelligent, qualified people to Krishna consciousness. And so therefore, it's worthwhile for us to understand this whole subject philosophically and in depth. Indeed, we'll be hearing about it throughout the entire seventh canto, so that we can be filled with the conviction that that Krishna is available to anyone who really wants to take it, and that doesn't make us special. Although certainly we receive special mercy, still we shouldn't consider ourselves to be special. We should always have this mentality that the Lord is available to anyone, and it's actually my responsibility to take advantage of that opportunity and to give that opportunity to others, rather than thinking that it's due to some, you know, being born in a certain geographical location, you know, under the guise of a certain culture or whatever. And therefore, Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking from Narada Muni to understand it very clearly. We should know that because Maharaj Yudhisthira is asking, it must be a really important subject to understand in depth. So I'd like to finish on that point. Maybe some of you have some comments or challenges, retorts, multiplications, additions, subtractions. No? Karantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Nitya Gaur Premanandi Haribam.